Okay, well, we might get started because there's quite a lot we've got to get through today. Just to introduce myself, my name is Bezena Hinton and I'm the Chair of the Life Insurance and Wealth Management Practice Committee. So thank you for all for coming along today to hear about careers in life insurance. It's great to see that we've got such a large turnout, and also I understand we've got about 45 people on the webinar. So hello to everyone on the webinar too. Now, working in life insurance has had some less positive press in the last couple of years. So today's session is really designed to present an alternative view. We're going to hear from five actuaries who are midway through very successful careers and have enjoyed their time as life insurance actuaries. And so hopefully today we're going to be able to demonstrate that life insurance is the place to be, the place where you're going to have a really great career. So I'm now going to briefly introduce the speakers, and then each speaker is going to present for 5 to 10 minutes. And then after that, we're just going to take a few minutes, during which time I'm going to ask you to speak to the person in front or behind and introduce yourself and say where you're from and say why you came along today and ask what they think about working in life insurance. And I deliberately said not next to you because you probably know the people next to you, but you might not know the people in front or behind you. And then after that, we're going to have a Q&A session where you'll get a chance to ask the speakers anything you like. So just to introduce our speakers, Catherine Robinson-Potter is a director at KPMG, and she's worked for over 20 years in financial services, specialising in life insurance. And she's worked in Australia and New Zealand in a number of corporate life insurance roles prior to moving into consulting 7 years ago. She's worked across unit pricing, pricing risk and investment products, product management evaluation, and is currently the appointed actuary of an Australian life insurer. Daniel Levy is the General Manager for Portfolio Development at NAB Wealth and is responsible for product and platform strategy for wealth products. He's previously worked in a number of corporate and consulting businesses, most recently with responsibility for pricing of NAB's retail life insurance and superannuation products. As the head of the life insurance pricing team, his team delivered a number of product innovations and negotiated an international reinsurance deal. Daniel also worked on the sale of MLC's insurance business to Nippon Life. Then we've got Dara Brady, who's recently joined Pacific Life Re to become the Chief Risk Officer for Australia and the Asia businesses. Dara has broad international experience in the actuarial, financial and risk management functions. Previously, while heading up the capital management team in Cominshaw, he was responsible for ensuring that adequate capital was maintained over time, advising executives on the implications of strategic decisions, and leading the implementation of the new industry capital standards. And additionally, Dara has also worked in life and pension valuation roles in Australia and in Ireland. Jared Stoward is currently the head of actuarial decision support for insurance and wealth management at AMP. In this role, he's responsible for the valuation, financial reporting and investigations in relation to AMP's insurance and wealth management business lines. He's previously worked in a number of corporate and consulting finance-related roles in Australia and Hong Kong. And Steve Attard is currently the chief and appointed actuary at TAL. Formerly, Steve worked with Zurich Insurance in various roles, including as chief and appointed actuary for the Australian life and wealth management businesses, as interim chief actuary for the Latin American joint venture with Santander, and in various other actuarial and finance roles. Prior to joining Zurich, Steve's career was in consulting, where he was a principal at Tillinghurst, now Towers Watson, where he worked in London, Sydney, and throughout Asia on a multitude of projects. Please now welcome Catherine.
Hi, so I thought I'd just run a bit through my career history, and I'll try and make it not too boring, and then just talk through what I like about working in, or love, should I say, about working in life insurance. So I started, and you might know from my accent, or might not, that I was born in New Zealand. So I'll have to talk about the Breakers and the rugby, but not the cricket. And I started studying law when I was there at uni, and decided now I needed my numbers. So I decided I wanted to be an actuary, and got a holiday job. It helped that my mum worked for an insurance company and actually knew what an actuary was, which is partly why I headed down that track. So I sort of fell into life insurance, to be honest. In my uni, there were four of us that knew each other that were actually studying actuarial. We don't have an actuarial course there, so you actually just make a decision and see do your exams afterwards the long way. And three of us went into life insurance, and one went into asset consulting. So it was more common back then for us to actually go into life insurance, and we didn't. I guess I wasn't aware of other areas necessarily. So I worked in corporates for 14 years, about four of them in New Zealand, and then came across to Australia. So, and as you said, in a number of roles. So I started out in the special accounts team, which, yeah, it was did my time, and then went into unit pricing and did performance reporting, so attribution analysis and stuff like that. And then I've done pricing valuation across both investment and risk products and individual and group. So had a broad range of experience, which is what I wanted. I wanted to feel like I was sort of a broad actuary and getting exposure to the sort of wider business. So almost 8 years ago now, I moved into consulting. And what I love about that, so part of my focus is more why I'm on the panel is to talk about consulting, so I thought I'd focus on that a little bit more. So I love the variety. So I get to work on a lot of different things, often on the same day, as those of you who are consulting know. And it gave me that, and it challenged me to learn new things, and it certainly pushed me outside my comfort zone, which I needed at the time. It was something I was looking for, and maybe a bit broader in terms, again. So I love catching up with people, so anyone knows that and knows me, knows I love coming and having a coffee. My key thing is actually keeping it on business topics rather than everything else that's interesting. I love solving problems for clients. So that's my thing I really love about consulting, is that just being able to take something, make a bit of order out of chaos or anything like that. So it is a job that suits what I like and my style. I get a bit bored if I'm doing the same thing all the time, or it's running really smoothly. Well, there's not much for me to change, so that's probably not the role for me. I also in consulting get to work on jobs that are a little bit different. Unless you're lucky enough, like Daniel, to be in a company that's bought, you don't often get to work on those sort of jobs. And so I've worked on a few mergers and acquisitions as well, which is a great opportunity. But as I say, you can actually get in a corporate if you're lucky enough to be there, but you don't always. So that's a great opportunity. And I love that we've got to keep on top of changes. So there's been a lot of regulatory change over the past few years and so on, and you have to keep on top of that as a consultant. You're forced to, so that's been great. As you said, I'm an AA for an Australian insurer. That's also an opportunity that came along as part of what I do. So I really like that, and being able to deal with the business, deal with the board and so on has been a really good experience for me. As part of it, I feel like I've also developed my commercial skills. So that was that whole being able to communicate to my customers, my clients. And the board, you know, I had to run some board workshops, for example, when Latchett was coming in and talk about the risk appetite and things like that. So being able to work across the broader consulting, you know, group and be able to bring out that expertise in and take that to a client has been a fantastic opportunity as well. And, you know, but Daryl will know about that with the CRO role as well. And project management, stakeholder management, and so on is also part of my role, which I love. So it really depends on what you like. In terms of what I love about life insurance, as I said, I fell into it. So that was, you know, I didn't necessarily make a conscious choice, but I had some great role models once I was in there. I can see Fred in the room. My first appointed actuary was Eddie Jones. We both worked for him. And he was a really good role model in terms of you could see that people respected him in the business. He was a very collaborative leader for us. And he set a really good tone for me in the start of my career to say, I would like to have a role where I'm, you know, like that with my clients or with my, you know, in the future with my business that I'm working for. So that was a really good start for me in terms of seeing where my career could go. I actually believe in the product, so that's a good start. I think they've got an important role in our society, so for me that's something, as long as I believe in what I'm working in and there's some sort of value to me in that, I think that's important. If I didn't believe in it, then I should be working in something else, I think. I think it's an interesting time for us in life insurance as well. There's a lot of changes going on. We've obviously got changes in distribution, like the rise of group risk, I guess you'd call. That one's been interesting. Changes in commission. There's obviously something going on at the moment. Changes in companies' attitudes in terms of customer-centric and so on is very interesting at the moment. And also, like, for example, direct insurance, the opportunities with data analytics and so on is also interesting. As I said, customer products are changing at the moment, but also with the focus hopefully coming on retirement income products and so on, there might be new things coming into the market, so that's exciting. And as I said, regulatory changes. We've had some in the past. We've got IFRS coming, you know, again. So there's lots of changes coming, and that leads to interesting opportunities and things to do. So I like all that, and it creates that variety in what we do as well. I also like that I get exposure to both sides of the balance sheet. So I'm not just focused on liabilities all the time. I think I'm a frustrated accountant at heart. My mum and two sisters are all accountants, so I think I like to think I'm one as well. And I think we're also an industry that's ripe for new ideas. So So we're looking for people to come in either from, you know, other industries or come through with new skills, you know, whether it's in risk management or whether it's in, you know, big data, data analytics, whether it's in group risk, having more sophisticated modelling of things and so on. I think there are some real opportunities and some opportunities to change things, and that's what excites me about it as well, and hopefully for people coming into the industry, leads to exciting opportunities. So that was all I have to say, so I might hand over to Daniel.
Thank you. So Daniel Levy at NAB Wealth. So I might just very quickly go over this. So I'll do it in three dimensions though. So first of all, I've worked about half my career in consulting and the other half of my career in corporate. Second dimension is the areas I've worked in. So I've worked in the defined benefit superannuation space for about a third of my career. I've worked in the defined contribution superannuation space for about a third of my career. And I've worked in life insurance for the remaining third. And then the third dimension, I'll say, is sort of the technical aspects. So I started off in IT, so I actually spent, I'll get really precise here, a sixth of my career in IT. And I spent half of my career in technical stuff like valuation and all the number crunching and that sort of stuff that no doubt you're imagining I'm going to talk about in a minute. And the other two-sixths or one-third of my career in management-type roles. So what is it, you know, that I think's great about life insurance? Well, it's bloody complicated. And why is that good? Well, that's good because that means that the skill set we have in this room is really important in order for everybody to really understand what the economics of the business are. And what it means, in the pricing team in particular, is you're there, you're actually in the centre of it. You're bringing together all of the specialist expertise from around the business, be that product, underwriting, claims, valuation, capital, and sales, marketing. You're bringing it all together and you're working out what that actually means for the economics of the business, not only today, but into the future. So those decisions, that advice you're providing, are going to drive the economics of the business into the future. What I also really love about life insurance is that actually it's not just about the numbers. You talk about human behaviour. You know, behavioural economics comes into it. When you're doing pricing, you've got to be thinking about behavioural economics of your customers. You're looking at medical conditions, understanding, you know, with the specialists around the industry, medical technology. You've got to understand marketing, sales, advice. All of those things come together. So that, give you an example. So if we look at behavioural economics, I think Catherine referred to it, you know, been a rough time in the life insurance industry, increasing claims costs and things like that. So, you know, you'd go, well, let's increase our premium rates to make sure that the economics of our portfolio are maintained. And, you know, the first thing you go, well, okay, well, obviously increase the premium rates. Well, customers, say 1% of customers lapse. Well, that's great. So we do a quick calc and we go, okay, overall, 1% walk out the door, 99% of customers pay more. That all makes sense. Great. However, what are you got to think about? Well, you've got to think about the fact that those customers that walk out the door, are they the average customer or actually are they the healthier customers? Now, if they're the healthier customers and they leave, what does that mean for the customers you retain? Well, on average, they're not as healthy. And that's where it gets really interesting, because you've got to work out what that actually means. Not only the fact that you've lost some customers, you've got higher premiums on the remaining, but actually has the portfolio overall deteriorated? That's a really tricky thing to work through. So what else have I got here? So we mentioned earlier, I really enjoy the fact that you know, it's much more commercial in my mind working in the pricing area. When you're working in group insurance, you're responding to tenders. You work with reinsurers. So we mentioned before negotiating the commercial deal, which actually was one of the, if not the biggest reinsurance deal in Australia, certainly one of the biggest ones at $500 million. That took us quite the team quite some time to negotiate that. And as Catherine mentioned, I was very fortunate to be a part of the transaction team for the recent sale of MLC Insurance. So that's been really good. Now, that's all the stuff I like, maybe love a bit. Now let's go into what I love about life insurance. And this is going to be a bit tricky because the audience here is quite young, okay? So this might not work, so bear with me if it doesn't work. If you're an older audience, I know this would work. All right, can everybody please stand? Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to make a series of statements, right? And when you feel uncomfortable about the statement I'm making, please sit down. If you're comfortable with what I'm saying, remain standing. Okay. So, we all know that we leave a digital footprint. Okay. How are you comfortable with the fact that there's all these boffins, statisticians, and actuaries all the way around the world analysing your data and understanding what you're up to, what you like? So sit down if you're not comfortable with that. Okay, well, that's good. At least we have some people sitting down. Probably about 10 people in the room of 100 sat down then. Okay, let's move on then. So your bank, they know about all your financial transactions. So what do you think when they go, oh, you like cycling, you're a cycling enthusiast. Oh, you're a motorhome enthusiast. You like fast food. How comfortable do you feel about your bank thinking that about you? That's interesting. Not many people sat down there. Maybe about 5 people sat down there. So let's take it a bit further. Okay. So what do you think if you walked into your bank branch and the teller said to you, with your permission, we'd like to analyse your financial transactions with us, and we will offer you $1 million of life insurance without underwriting, noting that the underwriting process is a massively complicated thing. So they look at your lifestyle based on your banking transactions and offer you insurance without underwriting. How comfortable do you feel about that? Only one person sat down. That's interesting. I think in an older audience, we would have far more people sitting down there. Okay, so taking it one step further. All those people sitting down, okay, with that same thing, you walk into the bank branch, okay, you've asked the same questions I just did, but they also said, we'll give you a 20% lifetime discount on your insurance. That's $400 per annum saving on your life insurance if we do this. If you're sitting down, would you stand up now and say you're happy for your bank to do that? Ah, we had about 5 people standing up then. Okay. So, where am I going with this? Because at NAB, we have done the analysis which enables us to do this. And I will emphasise enables us to it. Okay. We could do this. So, 2 years ago, my team did some analysis. We looked at the lifestyle factors based on what our customers' transactions told us. We matched that up to the underwriting outcomes of those customers and we built a model. That model rates every customer from the most likely to be healthy to the least likely to be healthy. And if you can see the graph here, the most likely to be healthy is in the one box on the left-hand side and least likely to be healthy is on the right-hand side in the 10 box. Now, when we underwrite customers, okay, if we underwrite 100 customers, 17 of those customers are likely to pay a higher premium or have an exclusion, a medical exclusion or a lifestyle exclusion, all that sort of stuff on their policy. Okay? So we're focused on the 17 customers because if it wasn't for those 17 customers, we wouldn't bother with underwriting. But because those 17 customers cost a lot more to insure, we want to make sure that we identify those 17 customers, which is why we underwrite. Now that model, and this is the left-hand side there, if you had selected the customers at random, you would expect 17 of those to have some sort of loading or exclusion. The model ended up reducing that 17 to 2. So it's purely based on your banking transactions. Now, you can see where I'm going here. The question is, how should we use this? So we have this capability. So that's really a dilemma. You know, we've got this capability, and I think with the people in the room here being younger, we've probably got more people standing than we would otherwise. So you can probably sit down now. I should have said that before. Thank you. So this is what I really love. You know, there's all the technical stuff which is fascinating, but then you get into all these really difficult, you know, social issues, ethical issues, and customer expectation issues, and all those sorts of things. And I love life insurance because 2 centuries ago, life insurance was at the forefront of our society in terms of dealing with society's needs 2 centuries ago. And today, in the pricing team in life insurance, we're still at the forefront. We're seeing how we can use data, dealing with all those ethical, social issues around that exact problem that we're seeing day in, day out. And maybe since there's a lot of younger people here, chat with your parents with those same questions and see how comfortable they are. I think you'll find they're less comfortable than you are with this. So that's all I had to say. Thank you very much.
Hi everyone. So unfortunately I'm following Daniel and I don't have any games for us to play. I'm going to start with that. A lot of what Catherine was saying rang true with me. So I also not only fell into life insurance, but I also fell into actuarial. So I did a maths degree. I hadn't initially planned on doing actuarial work, but I got a job opportunity in defined benefit pension valuation back in Ireland. I spent a couple of years doing that. It was a great grinding for my career. My wife and I decided that we'd come to visit Australia for 6 months and fell in love with the weather, and we could argue maybe the working in life insurance. So I moved into AMP, and I worked in AMP retail valuations for a number of years. Following on from AMP, I moved across to CommInsure to head up the capital management team. And that was a very interesting time to be working in capital management because the industry was going through a lot of regulatory change. So I led the development of the LAGIC implementation and the development of the ICAP to the business. And most recently, I've now moved across to Pacific Life Re, and I'm not sure if everyone's aware of Pacific Life Re. Pacific Life Re are the newest entrant into the reinsurance market in Australia. So it's a very exciting time to be in Pacific Life Re because there's, as you can imagine, quite a lot happening. We have the benefit of having an overseas backing, but we're starting up here, so there's a real startup mentality. It's very exciting and innovative place to work. So why do I like working in life insurance? So you probably hear some similar themes resonated through all the speakers, but one of the key things for me is that ultimately life insurance is there for people when they need it most. So sometimes, you know, we're at the back end, we get caught up in the numbers, but every now and again, it's good to ground yourself and realize that, you know, what we're doing is adding value for society, and some other industries that we could potentially work in don't quite have that. I've been quite lucky in my career. I've had a lot of variations through my career. So I'm, again, like Catherine, I like new challenges, new innovations, different things happening. So for me, I've been very lucky, and the life insurance industry has offered me that opportunity to move through various things, to work on various projects, regulatory change, and now part of my role is based overseas. So I also enjoy the fact that there's a global nature to the role. So I spend part of my time in Singapore, so my role is based in Sydney and Singapore. And there's not many industries where it's so easy to travel across the world. So for people in Australia, it's quite easy for you to work in the UK, the US, etc. Complexity is something we've touched upon. So there's good and bad parts of complexity. For me, I'm quite technical. I quite like the long-term guarantees in life insurance, the complex balance sheets, dealing with the other side of balance sheets, investment strategy, everything like that. So some other industries don't quite offer that. So that's again, a big draw for me. One thing I'd like to touch on is that we, as a small company, we recently did a personality profiling exercise across our business. And what was quite interesting is that in a reinsurer and life insurers, you find that there's quite a diverse mix of people. So there is room for everybody in a life insurer. So we have certain personalities, more technical minded, focused people. You've got the more driven people. Now, they do map quite interestingly to certain roles, but there is roles for everybody in a life insurer. So with my background, so having worked in pensions or super for a number of years, having worked in a traditional life insurer, being part of a large bank and now working in a reinsurer, I have quite a good perspective across the different roles, and also, I probably should add, my wife is a GI actually, so I hear all about that too. And for me, life insurance is the role for me, so I really enjoy working in it, and I encourage everyone to work in it. The last thing I'll touch on is, so a former boss of mine, I thought this was quite funny, a former boss of mine, before becoming a life insurance actuary, he was a fighter pilot, and he was asked why he left being a fighter pilot to become a life insurance actuary. And his response was, fighter pilot wasn't exciting enough for me.
My job title is a bit of a mouthful, actually. It in no way correlates to how important I am. It does probably correlate to how busy I am. Look, my career, I sort of wanted to touch on sort of three different phases of my career and sort of what I enjoyed through each of those. And so my career has been predominantly finance-focused. I've been in mostly finance-related roles. So I started off on a graduate rotation program for a couple of years. I then sort of moved into more technical roles, if you like, and then on to sort of more recently sort of leadership and business-facing roles within finance. And interestingly, the common theme across all of them in terms of actually what drives what I find rewarding, Catherine touched on a little bit, was around the problem-solving aspect of the work, and Dan sort of touched as well on the complexity of life insurance. And I think the complexity is what drives a lot of the problem solving. So I guess what I'll sort of talk through is those three phases and how those two aspects sort of came out for me. So started with AXA on a graduate rotation program. So for anyone in the room or on the webinar, if you haven't yet started your career, I would highly recommend a graduate rotation program. So I think a lot of people talk about the variety of the work and that's good, but I've actually found that it's moving out to different areas gives you exposure to working with different people, which is something that I found quite valuable and probably didn't value until later on in my career. And it also starts to give you a bit of a flavour for just how complex life insurance is. So at the time, I didn't really have that appreciation, but what I learned from doing some non-finance related rotations at the time, such as working in pricing, It helped me understand the complexity of the business, so that later on in my career, when I was in certain roles, I had better appreciation for it. So through the graduate program, analyst roles are quite often mostly process driven. So at that stage in my career, a lot of the problem solving I did was how can I make this process more efficient. So like a lot of people, you've probably been in a role where you do a monthly valuation, you take a copy of last month's spreadsheets, you copy it over, you open it up and click edit links about 20 or 30 times and hit F9 and hope that the whole thing doesn't crash. So I did that sort of once and then thought, I'm not doing this every month for the next year. So probably my fondest memory is my macro that I built that sort of did my 3-hour sort of valuation task within 5 minutes. And so every month for the rest of that year, I would go and get a coffee, and I would come back to my desk and sit down and click the macro button. And I deliberately didn't turn off the screen update so that I could actually watch the macro in action. So that actually gave me enough time to finish my coffee. So that was the sort of problem solving that really drove me at that stage of my career. So I then moved on to more technical roles. So I did a couple of sort of valuation actuary roles and experience investigation roles with AXA in Melbourne, and then went to Hong Kong for a short period to do a couple of similar roles, and also saw some technical roles with KPMG in consulting. And at that stage in my career, the problem solving becomes a little bit different. So you sort of move beyond, or how can I make this process more efficient? It becomes a bit more about, why is the model not giving me the answer that I thought it was going to give? And so a lot of the enjoyment I got in that part of my career was digging into models or spreadsheets and understanding why it wasn't doing what I thought it was. And that's where a lot of the complexity of life insurance comes into it as well. It also started to give me a bit of a flavour for not just focusing on my models or my numbers, but started to get questions from other parts of the business about what they are seeing and why my numbers are not consistent with that. So it was probably my first experience that I remember when the CFO came to me and started asking me about how a change in lapse assumptions should impact the lapse experience. And that was probably the first time that it really dawned on me that not a lot of people actually really understand life insurance. It is complex. And so it made me realise that I've got a skill set that I can really contribute to this business. And it sort of gave me a feeling of sort of being valued and that's kind of carried with me throughout my career since then. I then sort of moved on to, left KPMG and joined AMP. And at that point, the last couple of years, I moved into more sort of leadership roles and business-facing roles. And again, sort of the problem-solving for me steps up a little bit, and the complexity steps up a little bit as well. So in the business-facing roles, instead of now being the one who has to dig in and understand why the numbers are inconsistent, I have to go out and explain it to people. So you get the enjoyment of someone in your retention team who has a KPI to improve lapse profits, and they get told that the way to do that is reduce lapses, and when they're seeing their lapses reduced but they're not making lapse profits, they get very disappointed. And even if you've got a good answer, you've got that actuarial answer, that doesn't necessarily keep that person happy. So it creates that problem of how do you manage stakeholder expectations. Probably another good example is with claims and trying to explain to a claims team why they need to close more claims this year to achieve the same outcome just because the actuaries change their assumptions. So it's sort of moving from sort of, I guess, yeah, that process efficiency to understand the complexity of the business to actually being the one responsible for communicating it and becoming, what I find rewarding, is becoming a bit of a go-to person across the organisation where people will come to you and your team to help them solve their problems. And that's something that I really enjoy. And then more recently as well, as I mentioned, sort of moving into leadership roles sort of people management. And again, it actually boils down to problem solving, but the problems are a little bit different. So the problems are more about how can I most effectively sort of utilise the team that I've got and the processes and the systems that I've got to solve a certain problem. And focusing not just on the short-term goals, but long-term goals. And that's where thinking about people's sort of development and potential career path opportunities. So what might be the right thing for you and your team today might not be the right thing for you and your team or the organisation in the future. And so trying to think about how you support sort of longer-term goals from a people development perspective. And so that's probably something that I never envisaged that I enjoy about an actuarial role. And I think certainly, like most people, probably started out as an actuary because you liked maths. I never envisaged that sort of the people leadership side and helping people get through their exams and helping people think through their career and being able to offer them different perspectives is something I find rewarding. But that's what I've enjoyed.
Okay, well, why did I start in actuarial? It was a maths thing, but it was economics and money as well. Being very much a sort of money-focused young guy, I started pretty much straight into life insurance. So for me, it wasn't quite accidental. Through school, I applied for various scholarships, a bit like the co-op type programs now, and on the fifth one, fortunately for me, after four rejections, the fifth one said yes, and Paul Swinhoe here gave me the scholarship that got me started in life insurance. So at the university, I started at Friends Provident, which was a very small UK life insurance company based in Nelson's Point. And, from there, continued with my actuarial exams. And there was as I was working there, my boss at the time suggested, well, maybe when you, you know, qualify, because I was moving a little bit too quickly, oh, I want to go to the UK and work there. And I said, oh, why? It's wet, miserable, cold. that's a terrible idea. But it's one of these things, the thought was in the head, and I qualified, and I thought, okay, yep, let me do this. So things were happening very slowly. I get impatient because I want to do things, I want to change things, and so nothing much happening. Called a friend who worked at a place called Tillinghast, which was a consulting company. To be honest, I didn't really know too much about Tillinghast. It's Towers Watson, and it's now Willis Towers Watson. But it was the premier consulting company. So after an interview over lunch with the boss, it was, okay, when do I go to the UK? And I took the opportunity, had 3 months travelling. Leaving for the UK, for me, was the first time I'd been on an aeroplane. Qualified actuary, but I'd had a slow start in moving. I've certainly caught up with it since then. So I had a couple of years consulting in the UK, and when you start out consulting, you know, you don't really consult, you just do what you're told. So it's a very good learning experience. I mean, you just can't go and consult to a company when you don't actually know very much yourself. So it was a very good learning experience. Boss eventually said, well, come back to Sydney. I was going to come back for Christmas. He said, just come stay. Shortly after that, I started here, but ended up in Melbourne a short time after, National Mutual at the time, now AXA, now AMP, and it was like, build the financial model. So essentially what everyone does now on profit, I had to go and install at National Mutual with a group of people and say, well, how do I do that? I mean, I've never done this before. But it's one of these experiences where you sort of get thrown in at the deep end, you'll work it out. You're a smart person, you'll work it out. So we got through that, and it took us about a year or so to build this thing, but you know, a lot of learning along the way. So I then sort of ticked along with consulting for the next few years, and really it was, I'm starting to get a bit used to this. It's starting to become a little bit the same. It's often routine, same clients. So I talked to the boss again and said, well, what about if you go to Asia? So after a little while, I said, okay, I'll go to Asia. So 2007 we agreed, another good chance. When you're moving jobs, moving countries, take a holiday. So for me it was 3 months in South America, and then arrived in Asia, 98. Early 98, just in time for the Asian financial crisis. And then Kuala Lumpur, the whole place is melting down. This was very bad for business when you've got a relatively high charge-out rate, and certainly you're not going to sell any work to any local customers. Fortunately, or unfortunately, the Japanese life insurance industry was blowing up. Basically, the industry was insolvent. So I got to go up there, pitch for a project, got started on a project, a local company that was essentially insolvent, needed help, and that's where things started in Japan. I ended up being in Japan for the next 3 years or so, one job leads to another, and then in consulting, the next opportunity came along to go to Hong Kong. So I was there in Hong Kong, and just happened to be passing the fax machine, and there's the fax from China Life Insurance Company. And essentially it was a rather vague piece of paper, but essentially that was the start of the project, which led to China Life IPOing in 2003. So go to Beijing, talk to them over there, and essentially come back with the policy data, which the in-force policy count was 140 million. So we had to buy a few new machines for that one. we couldn't really process it. It's quite bizarre being in Japan a few years earlier when we get the data from the client for the first project. A box gets delivered, and the box is full of magnetic tapes. That's the data. We think of Japan being a very high-tech place, but in many ways, it wasn't and it isn't. So after Hong Kong, myself and my wife decided, well, time to have a family. Probably Hong Kong not the best place to do it, so come back to Sydney. I'd been with the same consulting company for a good period of time, maybe 12 years, and there wasn't really any room to come back to, so no more job. One of the dangers of going overseas with a company, you might not get back. That was okay. I basically stopped work 2003, took some more holidays, and then stayed on holidays for all of 2004 and into 2005. So, laugh off, because that's what life is for. It's not all about working. Well, my wife had a baby, we have a child at home, so maybe it's time to go back to work, because it'll be easier than not. there was a job at Zurich at the time for the appointed actuary, and another possibility came up in Tokyo again. I was to work for a consulting company, and so it was either Tokyo and consulting, or 3 minutes from home, appointed actuary, chalk and cheese job. The Tokyo job is going to be more complex, possibly more interesting, more high risk, and a lot of money. But then, well, should I take the local job? And okay, I took the local job around the corner. So, chief appointed actuary at Zurich in Australia for a few years. Small company, so you get exposed to basically everything. But the business is fairly straightforward. And again, after a few years, what's next? Spoke to somebody in Switzerland, and sort of things soon moved on. And I got a job to work over in the head office. It was called Head of Inforce Management at the time. And one of the things I found working in Zurich in the head office is people change jobs very frequently. I ended up being in Zurich for probably 6 years, and I had about five different bosses over that time and about five different roles myself. But I got to be involved in, I was head of reporting at one point, so the global embedded value and all of the life insurance liabilities for the whole of the Zurich group. So the embedded value was about $17 billion, covered many, many countries, so that was a big and high-profile type job, because I get to write 30 pages in the annual report each year. But then the transaction came along. I had part of my role was around the transaction, so this joint venture with Santander, a very high-profile European bank, and their Latin American operations. So got the first work on the transaction, and had a very interesting situation in Brazil, where there was a block of business that had investment guarantees, and the investment guarantee was 6% real. So the office guarantees to pay you 6% plus inflation, which was about 12%, and you know, as part of the transaction, well, how do we value this block of business? What price, or what negative price? How much are they going to have to pay us to take this thing? So, well, I could come up with a few different numbers, but I'm just not going to give you a number, because I could easily be $1 billion wrong within a couple of years, so no price. We simply can't take that business. So part of the things I enjoyed about being on the transaction team was actually being able to influence the deal structure. There are times when you simply don't take on a risk pretty much at any price, because you just don't know where this thing can go. Inflation in Brazil right now is about 10%, so it would have been dramatic losses. But yeah, like all things, the time in Zurich came to an end. And I ended up taking more time off, because I like that. I got the job in TAL. Now, TAL is essentially now is the biggest group writer in Australia. Probably was early last year, but it was almost second. Now, you'd probably think that, obviously, when they're recruiting somebody, they want somebody who's got a lot of group experience, and the reality is I had none. But actually, that's okay. It's not a problem. You get to the point where you can learn new things. One of the things I like about my job is I can still learn new things. It happens all the time. What I like about it as well is the fact that I've been in corporate and I've been in consulting, and actually corporate is consulting. My job is consulting. Every day it involves consulting in some form or another. The appointed actuary isn't somebody who just does things in a compliance type role. I get to influence the products that we sell in their design, so group products and individual products. I've got capital and ALM under my brief, so where we invest the money, I have some influence over. I don't say that I own it or I direct it, but I can influence it, I can change it. One of the big things we did at Zurich back in 2007, we earned, the investment manager was telling us, we just earned 20% on our property investments this year. And actually, we've earned 20% for the last 3 years in a row. but we think there's a bit of a bubble here. Things are going to change. And after a couple of quarters of hearing the same message, actually, guys, why don't we do something about this? So we had, well, I won't say how much, we had a decent investment in property, and late that year we just sold everything. Now, a year later, they lost 75%, you know, of their value, and it was like, oh, well, it's nice to be involved in something that, you know, actually works. So I like influencing the business. I get to speak with the board, I get to speak with the CEO, to sort of provide my views, and that's both positive and negative. Within companies, there's always a lot of spin. You know, what's great about our company? What's great about our company? I tend to focus on what isn't great, what can go wrong, what can break. Even if things are going well right now, and things are actually going reasonably well right now, what's going to break the place? So that's what I tend to think about. I like change, so all of our actuarial processes are now sort of up in the air to improve things. So we don't like this update links idea. We need to fix things, we need to make them better. So, yeah, there's an awful lot that can be done. But basically, I really like what I'm doing. I've been doing it for a long time, and I have no reason to think I necessarily want to do anything else. Okay? Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much to all our speakers today. I hope you've enjoyed what they've had to tell you. Now, I'd like you just to spend a couple of minutes and speak to either the people in front of you or behind you, and firstly introduce yourself and say where you're from, say why you came along today, and then what you think about working in life insurance. And while we're doing this, for you, those of you who are on the webinar, please think about what questions you'd like to ask the speakers, because as soon as we've done this little exercise, we're going to have a Q&A session. So please send any questions to, and the rest of you can also be thinking about other questions to ask too. But now please start talking.
I don't know.
Okay, everyone, I hope that you've Okay, everyone. I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying yourself. We've got to get back to the Q&A session, as I know everyone's got a busy afternoon ahead of them. But hopefully you managed to introduce yourself to someone that you didn't know and found out something that was interesting. But I'm not going to ask you to tell us right now. You can tell the people later. What we're going to move on to is questions for our speakers. So I'd just like to open up to anyone. If anyone's got a question, please let me know.
I'll start the question.
Yeah. I know. Sorry. I know the presentation is all about what you love about life insurance. So what don't you like about life insurance? If there's one thing you can name, yeah. Not the purpose of this event, but
how about systems? There's a lot of legacy systems. So I've worked in quite a few insurers, and we've had those challenges. And lots of different places. I remember one place we worked, we sold a product that we didn't have a system that could handle yet, so it was on spreadsheets for a little while. So systems has been a barrier for me at different times in my career.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I mean, I'd also, from a personal point of view, I don't like working in finance. You know, the monthly thing just drives me insane. But I'm not that typical in that respect, and that's cool.
For me, so while I love certain most aspects of working life insurance, there are times, generally around year end, where you're working back quite late and it's not quite the best place to be. So.
Yeah, I'd probably echo that one, as well as the poor systems and data. I think the other one though I might add is. So Steve touched on it a bit, there's that ability to influence other parts of the business, but probably one of the bits I don't enjoy is when you're trying to do that and people don't listen to you.
Yeah, well, systems is a common theme, but I think that leads to capacity and resources. So I sit at my desk and I always want more stuff to be done, so I'm trying to farm it out, and there's just a limitation on what can be done. But the other thing is around wanting to change things, and you decide or you think we need to change something, but in organisations the way they are now, you need consensus. So it isn't up to me, for example, to just, I think this should be changed, so let's change it this month, and we do it. It's, well, you need to bring the organisation along. Who's this going to impact? You're going to change the numbers, because you changed the numbers. That's going to affect somebody's performance. They had no control or impact over what you've just done. So sometimes things change more slowly than you would otherwise. I'd like to just change it now and let's be done with it, but the real world is a little more slower.
Anyone else got a question?
I guess the undercurrent, maybe just to ask it explicitly, what's your view of the prospects for young people that are considering life insurance?
And you don't all have to.
Oh, well, I think they're very exciting, and it's an industry that plays an absolutely critical and important role in our society, and. It would be a miserable place to live in without it, and that means that, you know, it's always going to be an exciting place to be in. The world is changing all the time, and there are always new opportunities that can be explored. And as I said before, in an actuarial capacity, you're in the centre of the business because you're the only ones that understand what the hell's going on.
I think also, I just add that I think it's an opportunity for the new people coming into the industry, that they bring new tools and new exciting stuff that we didn't have around when we were starting out. As you said, we're part of midway through our careers or whatever. You know, so they've got skills that we don't have.
that we need to facilitate and ideas that we also can take on board, so you actually have an opportunity to make a difference to the industry too. Yep.
There's always room for more talent coming through, because as you progress sort of through the industry, through life insurance, there are many other opportunities that open up. So in the company that I work for, the CEO, the CFO, the CRO, they're all actuaries. There's a lot of actuaries spread throughout the business, not just in the actuarial area, but really throughout the life insurance business. And as people sort of move up and arguably out, it opens up opportunity just throughout the organisation.
And I might just build on what Catherine just said there, which is that, you know, the work that I showcased before, you know, if it was based on my skill set, we wouldn't have got there. It's the young guns and the team that that did that work, and, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do it without those new ideas and skills coming through from university. So.
When you did that game earlier, you somehow managed to predict that the younger people would be less afraid to give more their information about themselves up than the older people. Just wondering, do you think that, and it's not just you, I guess any of you can answer this, but do you think it's because of the fact that it's just the nature of young people to be more free with that sort of stuff? Or do you think that it's the nature of the changing world we live in? You know, we tend to reveal more information about ourselves, you know, with social media and stuff. If it's the first case where only younger people are more likely to give up more information, do you think the data collection with this sort of stuff would be too skewed towards the younger population?
Oh, there's probably a multitude of questions in there, but I don't know, to be honest, but I think there's probably a combination of, you know, the younger generation, mostly represented in the room here, are used to the fact that when you go onto Google and you start typing in, you know, for an iPhone, all of a sudden all the ads down the right-hand side are iPhone, you know. I think that probably when you get a bit older, you're probably a bit more alert or aware of the sorts of things that some people do with the data, and so you may well just be a bit more cautious about that. And then the third thing I was going to say, I've forgotten, so maybe we'll come back to you in a minute.
Are there any more questions?
One of the common themes that was present throughout all your presentation was that a lot of you started out from more technical roles and then move on to leadership management type roles. So for the younger actuaries out there, what key skills do you think we should look to develop or hone if we want to move towards that sort of leadership or management position in the future?
Communication. Okay, I'd say communication. So being able to, and it's a theme here, like being able to communicate those complex things to non-actuarial audiences is critical. I think that's, and becomes a barrier if it's something that you struggle with. So I think personally, that's a personal opinion, but I think communication.
Yeah, communication is critical for progress. But in terms of technical skills, products. You have to know the products and what do the products do, how do the products behave, and how do you expect the customers to react to the product design, the commission basis we have. And for me, that's all about cash flows. You have to know the cash flows that underlie the products that we sell. How do those cash flows move? That's one of the things that I think is we see less of it. Certainly when I was starting out, the work was all around looking at the cash flows, building the cash flows, and examining what happens when certain things move. I think everybody has their cash flow systems. They sort of sit out the back and you just change an assumption and something comes out. It's really understanding, is what is coming out actually sensible? Is it working properly? You need to know what the answer is before the machine tells you what the answer, because for me, the intuition is more effective than the black box. The technical skills, products.
I'd add to both of those points, I think, absolutely. But what I try and do sort of at a more practical level is when I've got that understanding that Steve's talking about, I try and create a mental shortcut for me that actually tells me, because in the pricing area, you know, you'll get business people coming to you and asking you a question, and the ability to actually say, most likely, this is the answer, there and then on the spot, is actually so valued by the people you're working with. And as Steve said, you know, building up that real proper understanding about what's driving the economics of it from the cash flow up, and then saying, well, what have I learned about it, and then being able to use those rules, those shortcuts in your mind to answer questions on the spot is really, really important.
Just I'd add to the communication point, which is around how do you go about learning those communication skills, because I don't think it's not like your part three exams, your part two exams where you sit there and read the textbook and it doesn't help anyway. I think with communication, you'll learn a lot by observing how other people in the organisation communicate, so particularly senior people. So my suggestion there is to try and put yourself regularly in positions where you can observe senior people and how they communicate and how they influence, and I think that's the way to go about actually building that skill.
Just to add to what Jared is saying there, so, you know, a couple of years ago I would have been in a much more technical role, and I had a very good boss who pushed me to get outside my comfort zone and take the opportunities to present in front of people, to do all of that. So just take those opportunities, push yourself out of your comfort zone and take the challenges on.
Other more questions? Yep.
I think these two of you said that you'd actually changed fields and had started in defined benefit superannuation. I was wondering if you could say what it's like to consider changing fields, whether that's a major life-changing decision or whether it's a fairly minor one. If this is going to be successful, there are presumably people in the room and on the webinar who are facing that decision. So what is it like to deal with the fact that you are making quite a big jump?
For me, I mean, I changed from doing defined benefit superannuation to then working in defined contribution and then into life insurance, and I can't say it was really that purposeful. The first change was because I moved from England, where I was living at the time, with my wife, and then we moved to Australia. So that was kind of, defined benefit was really important in the UK market, and here it was, you know, largely, very small, or irrelevant. So I just came over here and I went, well, I've got general skills around, you know, like to Steve's point, understanding how cash flow models work and that sort of stuff. And then I found that actually it, you can apply those general skills. And yes, there are some new rules, as I was talking about, for shortcuts that I had to learn to be able to be useful again. But the core skills and stuff like that you learn as an actuary, in I think in any of the fields, is largely transferable. So I just accidentally moved around my career. So.
I'm going to echo the same things. I moved to Australia. There wasn't exactly many opportunities to work in defined pension valuation. but the skill sets are very transferable. So.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions you'd like to ask our speakers? Yep.
I guess just stemming from that question, any career change or career move, was it like a plan, or what's driving a change?
For me, what drives the change, well, there's two things for me that's happened. One is I've got bored, and the other is because I'm generally seen as useful, hopefully, no one will disagree with me in the room, generally seen as useful, when there's a particular problem in the organisation, you know, people will think of me to help solve it. So, and it's never been deliberate. The most deliberate thing I've done is move from, my career was moved from England to Australia with no particular idea about what the hell I'd do when I got here.
Okay, anything else to wrap up? All right, well, in that case, please join me in thanking our speakers, Catherine, Daniel, Dara, Jared, and Steve.